Hey everyone, welcome to Queerly Recommended, the podcast where we recommend queer books, films, TV shows, and more. I'm Tara Scott. I review sapphic fiction at The Lesbian Review and Smart Bitches Trashy Books. And this week, I'm recommending a queer YA novel.
And I'm Chris Bryant, a contemporary romance writer for Bold Strokes Books. And this week, I'm recommending a double feature.
Ooh,
new movies. Bring your popcorn
movies.
And your sugar babies and your big giant Diet Coke and sit with me.
Mm-hmm. As always, just want to say thank you so much to the folks who support us through our coffee, through our newsletter on Substack. There are links to both in the show notes if you're inclined to support us as well. And if you haven't told a friend about us yet and you think they need more book and film and TV recommendations that are super, super queer, tell them all about us.
So Tara, what has been happening with you?
Well, as we discussed recently, we went on a family vacation to Victoria. So a couple of airports, restaurants, all these places, came home. A couple of weeks later, I went to Vancouver for 2 days. A couple of airports, bunch of restaurants, at a conference, came home. And it was when I came home that I got COVID again.
What is it? Is it three times now or four?
It's three that I know of.
Okay.
I sometimes wonder about some of the, like, what I thought were just colds and sore throats. And this is probably the least worst of the three that I know of. The coughing is bad for sure, but it's not like, do you remember that first time I had it, how I was like laid out for a couple of months? It's not like that, thankfully. And I'm also really glad, basically, as soon as I started to feel like something was off, because I didn't get the sore throat, but it was just like weirdly hard to swallow. Like there was a bunch of phlegm at the back of my throat. Sorry to be gross. And also the very tops of my lungs just felt a tiny bit weird. And I was like, oh, I'm going to stop lifting weights and just see how this goes. And about a week and a half later, so we're filming this on a Sunday this past Friday. Yeah, it had been about a week and a half since I started to feel that way. I was supposed to go over to a coworker's house because I work at a company. It's all remote. There is no office space. They don't have offices all over, and they definitely don't have one here in Calgary. So at the places where they have groups of employees, every few times a year, they try to get us together in person. And sometimes in Calgary, we go to a co-working space. Sometimes we just go to a colleague's house. I was supposed to go to my grand boss's house, which is what's what one of my friends says, like, your boss's grand boss.
I was like, wait, what?
She would be so mad if she heard me say it too, because she's also a friend. But I was supposed to go to her house, and there were a few other colleagues that were going there. And I was like, you know what? This cough is still kind of nasty. I can take some syrup, but like, I'm just going to test just in case. And there was
there
that
it was.
Fake line. And I was like, son of a bitch.
Damn.
That's why this cough is so hard to kick. So I was like, well, in good
it's
news.
The
I
guess it's the children. It's the children. Can you put them somewhere? Like,
that's the problem.
Let them
we do
grow
them
up by themselves.
But it's that place we put them where they get sick.
Right.
I know. It's, they did nothing in our schools. And I kind of think as long as you have kids going into school, like, you just don't stand a chance.
Right.
You're just going to get it over and over and over. Mm-hmm. I've been doing a great job of resting this weekend.
Good.
Canceled all my plans. Was supposed to go for a lunch with one of my best friends. Was supposed to go for dinner with Neil last night. Introduced him to my favorite restaurant in the city. Yeah, didn't do that either.
Well, that's sad because I have never had it. Knock on wood.
I know. I think that's amazing. I don't know how I don't know how you've done it, but congratulations.
Well, first of all, I'm never around children. Like, I see one and I run. It's like, no, no, I am not available for hugs. Mm-hmm. I can love you from a distance.
Yeah.
It's good to see you. You've gotten taller, I think. But also, you know, I have my own office at work. I go in for 3 days a week and people stay in my doorway. I don't let them in my office. I do have one chair that's parked in the corner of
my
office.
Oh my God. You enforce social distancing
at
your office.
Yes, I do.
Amazing.
I do. And except the only time I'm not is when we have our engineering meetings. Then we're all in the conference room. Then I'm next to, like, there's only two women in the engineering department. And as a project manager, I have to go. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting with, you know, people that I don't know where they've been, who they've seen. Some of them have small kids, you know, mm-hmm. so a chance every Tuesday.
Yeah.
Or is it every Wednesday? I think they changed it to Wednesdays. But either way, like if there's somebody coughing or if they look like they are not feeling well, I wear a mask. I don't care how ridiculous it is. I will wear a mask because I seriously, I don't want it. Like,
no,
you know, and I've seen like my sister's had it like twice now or three times. And she had such just it like almost killed her.
Yeah, I was going to say she had a devastatingly bad case.
She almost died. Yeah. So she's had it twice. So the second time around, so like after she was like, she only has a certain percentage of capacity in her lungs. And so, because she has long COVID. So the second time, they told her, I said, if you get it again, you're probably going to die. But that was back during the Delta variant. And so she got all of her shots and her vaccines. And and then when she went to Europe with Debbie, they both got it.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah, but my sister's was really mild. And it was so funny because like Debbie had one job and that was to take care of my sister. And then my sister gets COVID. And so she was super worried because we didn't know that the latest was, oh, you're not going to die because you've had your vaccines. Mm-hmm. Your vaccines are up to date. You're as protected as you possibly can be. Mm-hmm. And so, because I think with Delta, she was only eligible for like the first shot.
Protected.
No, right. So now she's able to be up to date with all of the vaccines. Mm-hmm. And she's actually getting back from Peru tonight. She's been in Peru for 2 weeks. My sister like travels all over. She has wanderlust like nobody else.
Wow. That's cool though.
I can't wait to tell her this offer I got from Caesars Reward. They want to fly me and two people, deluxe hotel room accommodations, and round trip airfare.
Whoa.
My sister in
Vegas,
like,
the one in Vegas or a different one?
It's actually the one in, I think I can pick Lake Tahoe, Tunica, the place I went before. Mm-hmm. All because I went to that stupid place, Atlantic City, Gulf Coast, and Laughlin. So anyway, that just came in the mail. I just opened it. So it's kind of funny. I was like, wow, look at that, a free trip. But is it free?
Patty, no. Guess what?
Pack your bags. Check out some money. Let's go.
You're going. That's amazing. Yeah, I'm just hoping. I'm not going to lie. It does make me a little more. I'm still going, but it makes me a little more nervous about GCLS. It's like, really like to not get it again in three months. So hopefully people show up if they're sick.
So here's the deal. So the last GCLS, I didn't hear of anybody having it. The time before, I did hear somebody having it. Back in Albuquerque, I think a couple people had it. I didn't hear of anybody having it in Denver. And I feel like you still have your immunity since it's 3 months away. You'll still some immunity. So I'm not going to worry about it. I'm driving. So I'm not going to be in an airplane, but I am driving up there. But I will be immersed in all the people. Like I know going in that there's a chance I will get something, some sort of cold being around everybody. I know that. It's just one of the risks you take doing what I do. So,
yeah. Well, I'd like to take this opportunity yet again to recommend, if you haven't yet, go get boosted because COVID is still around and it can still kick your ass.
Right. I think I'm fully boosted. I don't think I can get another shot if I tried.
They release new boosters here, but only if you're... I think it's like age 70 or over, certain health conditions, and First Nations, Inuit, or Métis.
See, here, like, there's so many anti-vaxxers here that, like, the vaccines are available anytime for anybody, whoever they want it.
So like, I need to go to Missouri.
Yeah. So you need to come here, get your vaccines, and then go. Because, seriously, I can go down to, I actually went to Target to get mine. Like, the very first one. We were at Hy-Vee, which is this big grocery store that has a pharmacy up front. And like there were lines of people and you had to get a number. And it was just like everybody was scared. You know, it was one of those where everybody was wearing masks and you were all keeping your distance. And if you didn't have a mask, you know, they'd ask you to leave. And it was just a big deal. And now it's like I go to Target. I'm like, oh, hey, is there a new booster? Can you boost me? And they'll boost me.
Amazing.
It's just so ridiculous because nobody wants it here. It's unbelievable to me.
It was kind of like that here for a while. And I think it still is. So I'm a little surprised they're not making it available for everybody. Like, come on, you're not going to run out.
Right. Right.
But whatever.
Yeah, you will not run out.
No. Oh, Chris. I almost called you Christopher. I don't know why. That was the name that Rose said.
My dad, my parents, well, actually, my dad actually calls me Christopherless. So kind of similar. Christopherless. What?
That's
and I
cute.
Respond to it because he's been calling that my whole life. So,
it's
but
a
yes.
Cute nickname. All right. Christopherless, what have you been reading or watching lately?
So, of course, I had to watch at least the first round of the NFL.
Why the first round? Is that the most exciting round?
It's the most exciting round. And that's where you find out, like, whose football cards you should have been. I mean, let's be real.
Got it.
I mean, that's kind of like the first runners. Like, whoever gets picked in the first round, their cards, if they're quarterbacks, they're going to be, if they do well, like CJ Stroud did really well. But then you had some first round picks like Bryce Young, who did nothing. He was the first round, number one in first round, and he really didn't amount to anything. And then you had like Will Levis, same thing. First round did the greatest. And here's the thing about the NFL. And I don't know if you know how this works, but I'm going to explain it to you very simply. The teams who did the worst the previous year get the first pick in the NFL draft, which is kind of a bummer for the really good quarterbacks. You get a team that, you know, they try to lure you with like, hey, you have the, we're going to totally have this team built around you as a quarterback. You know, and then you have like, either you're like, oh my God, I'm playing for the worst team ever. And there have been some people who have threatened to sit out the first year for that reason. So you either have somebody who's like, I have to play for the worst team in the NFL, or you have the people who are like, this is such an opportunity, I'm going to turn this team around. So those are like the two picks. Mm-hmm. And like, this was a huge, like, first round picks were a lot of quarterbacks. Like, some of them I'm like, oh man, sorry, they're going to be riding the bench. But I feel like there are a couple teams that are going to really shine this year. Anyway, so this isn't about the NFL. This is just a podcast about career things. So I watched that, and I kind of have been watching that all weekend on and off just to make sure my Chiefs, my Kansas City Chiefs, have picked good, valuable players for us. So I started a series called Crashing. I think it's from 2016 and it's three seasons. And it has the woman from Fleabag. She's in it.
Oh, okay.
So this was before Fleabag. And I think it has potential. I think it might be a recommendation at some point. But right now, the queerness really isn't fully fleshed out. There's one character who for sure is queer, but then there's really not a whole big storyline. But I think one of the characters also is dying his sexuality. It's just, I don't know what's going on there. So I'm watching that still. And I am also in edits and I'm writing. I have a deadline. So I'm doing like two really hard things to do at the same time. So
get excited, Chris Bryant fans.
I know. It's been two books. Yes. And I'm actually sending this one to a sensitivity reader, which is something I haven't done before. So by damn, it's going to be right. Everything about perfect is going to be, it's going to be perfect. Perfect is going to be perfect. But I'm
worth the investment.
Right. So that is it for me. What about you? What have you been reading and watching, Tara?
Well, I finished Drag Race season 16. I think that is one of the best seasons that has happened in a while. It brought like season 2 and 3 level drama.
Oh,
because in more recent seasons, the queens have shown up and kind of been more reluctant to be messy. Because if they get too messy, they often get a bunch of bullshit from the fandom on social media. Because the Drag Race social media fandom can be awful sometimes. Like, queens have been bullied off of platforms. And there were some queens who showed up this season and were like, nope, I'm going to bring the full mess. I'm just going to do it. So it was just really fun to watch from that regard. Plus, there were a lot of queens who were incredibly talented. So I think this might actually be a good season. Like, if you haven't watched it before and you're wondering a good place to start, there are other good places to start, but season 16 could be a great place to start.
Ooh, yeah.
And the finale, I was thrilled with the person who won. And the final lip sync was just incredible. Just absolutely incredible. Somebody did a costume reveal mid cartwheel, which was just one of those like, what?
Wow. 'Cause
they were like fasteners over the shoulders. And so you see them sort of doing something and then they do this flip and they're in a different costume. And I was just like, what?
That's super impressive.
It was so good. It was so good. So yeah, I loved it. And I think, Chris, if you're going to watch one season, you might as well watch that one because you have a Kansas City queen in it.
Well, that sounds perfect. And can we talk about my new drag name? Can we talk about it? Because
it's up to you. Chris came up with a drag name for herself.
So there's a little backstory to this. I went to go visit KB Draper. I was at her house. We were going to walk the dogs. And she had her garage door up. And you know that draft, you know, when you close a door, open a door, it slams it shut because the suction of, like, you know, the whole physics of it. Anyway, so I opened the door that leads into the kitchen and like swoosh comes in. And there is they have a giant, like 3 foot by 2 foot painting, like in a frame with a glass cover. That's just like sitting on the top of their refrigerator, like where you could see it. It's just leaning up against the wall of the refrigerator. Well, whatever that suction was, sucked that painting down onto my head.
Oh,
like, yeah. So I had like this bump. I had this like cut on my head and a bump. And so because I heard it and I, you know, when you hear a loud noise, your instinct is to cover your head. Maybe. I don't know, but that's what I do.
Yeah.
And so I put my hand up. And so my hand caught some of it and like, it kind of like, I kind of pushed the thing away, but it like, I was teased because I also got, I've been struggling with vertigo. And so I teased KB. I'm like, hey, she said something about, I should give you my insurance so you can pay for your medical bills. And then it dawned on me because I was so dizzy last week. I'm like, oh, I think I am going to need the name of your insurance agent. And so she said, let's see if I can find what she called her insurance agent. Oh yeah. She's like, I said, I'll need your insurance. God, can I talk today? That is a tough word for me to say. Insurance agent, insurance. That's hard to say 3 times fast. Go 3 times fast. Insurance agent, insurance. Nope. Can't do it.
Okay.
Nope. Anyway. And so she said, Lori Little Snatch. Like that. That was the name that she gave me. It was just kind of fun. So I said, oh, it's her boss. And just it came up to me so quick. And it was Ophelia Mound was her boss's name. So Ophelia Mound is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And I love it. And I feel like that would be a good drag name.
I think that's great.
I think so too.
And we finished watching Physical 100 last night. I think we talked about that a little bit last time. We really enjoy watching it, and we watch it with our friends Amanda and Tanya. It's because we continue to watch shows with them even though they're in Toronto. Like, it's kind of a way to like hang out but without being in person. So like, we call, we chat, we mute as we watch something, we get off mute if we want to talk about the show. And Physical 100 is just so ridiculous because it is this like, we're going to find the best physique in all of Korea. And it's like, well, first of all, the way it's set up, like, it's great that there are so many women in it, but like, a woman can't win unless they find a woman who is as tall as the men who tend to win. Like, there's often height things that hold them back. And there's just something about the editing that's so compulsive. They're so good at bringing the tension in the edit, and it always ends on a cliffhanger where you're like, well, who's going to win this challenge?
Sucker.
Can we watch the next one? So I think I might not have figured out who was the winner kind of like right off the hop. But that's the other thing that's interesting is you can't tell because a lot of it also depends on luck or is this something you're good at or not? Because there's such a range of bodies that show up. So yeah, Physical 100. Wonderful. I hope they do more of them because I enjoy it so much.
They should do one here.
Yeah, they should. And there was this like little animation at the end and then it said Physical Asia. So we were like, does that mean they're going to do a series that brings 100 people from across Asia? And I hope so.
Sounds like it.
I kind of hope they keep Westerners out of it and just make one with Westerners, because I'm curious to see, like, what would we get if they brought in people from, you know, China and Japan and Indonesia and Laos and, like, bring in all these other places.
Right.
Let us see all these other athletes. Because the U.S. also does have American Ninja Warrior. Like, there is something that's similar. That's true.
That is true.
It's not exactly it's, the same. And yeah. I do want to see one. But, like, I think I would almost be afraid of it getting dominated by more familiar people.
Okay.
When I like that, like, I don't know any of these people. Okay, this guy's a rugby player. Sure. What can the rugby player do? Let me see that. This guy's a CrossFitter. Okay, what can this CrossFitter do?
Well, maybe they would instill, like, some sort of rules where you can't be a professional athlete. But I think in the 100, you can be, right?
Yeah, like, you absolutely can. Like, there was somebody, there are people, like, Olympians that are in it. Yeah, like, they had people who went to the Olympics for wrestling and for judo.
But that's not going to help you when you have to hang.
No, I also wonder how many, like, the professional athletes, I think, are all retired from their sport when they come on this show. And I suspect that if it were Americans, they would do the same thing, because you don't want to risk, like, completely blowing out your shoulder.
Right.
And then giving up your actual, like, your salary or whatever that you're making.
Good point. Plus, I think American Ninja Warrior, even though it's fair, I think it's still very male oriented.
Yes. American Ninja Warrior, actually, the height problem is even worse.
Right. Rubber bite.
On that one, where there's certain things where, like, if you just can't jump that high, I guess you're fucked. And then you see this woman who's like 5 foot, she's my height, she's like 5'1", and it's like, lady, I'm so happy you're here, but there's no way, no way you're gonna jump that high to reach bars.
But she will hang, she will be able to hang, like, from wherever they hang from. But see, that's the problem I have with the American Ninja War. I like watching it. I think it's fun, but also it's like, it's so male dominated, and it's just like, come on, like, let's, that's why Survivor is fun, because they have like, a lot of the challenges are, I think they're fair. I feel like people are like, oh, this is really for men. They can, you know, they have to swim and then carry this weight, but then they also have to do, like, a balancing beam. And so they throw a lot of different strengths and weaknesses for both, quote unquote, sexes to, into these shows and into Survivor. And that's where the fun is, because you never know, like, who's going to really do well at a certain challenge.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's fair. I think that's part of why I liked Alone, too, is that, like, women win alone.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a man to be a survivalist. I mean, I feel like Callie could have gone all the way in her season. Right. She was just like, you know what? I moved out here. I'm just going to move home now. I'm good. But, like, she could have just kept living there.
Yeah.
In the little condo that she built for herself.
She built a condo. It was amazing. She, like, finished it up and she's like, yeah, I did this. Okay, I'm time to go. Time to go. I'm like,
it was like a spa. No. I'm done being at the spa.
And I'm sure, you know, because they break down everything. So I'm sure, like, paying them to break down this beautiful condo that she built out of the forest.
Yes.
It was amazing. Yes. It was amazing.
I know. I know. Hers, like, it actually, like, looked like a spa too, in a lot of ways. Okay. But also, so I like Harper Bliss quite a lot. I've been reading her since she was only releasing short stories on Amazon. I'm not fully caught up because she writes too many books to stay all the way caught up all the time. It's just not possible. But her newsletter said something about this book, and I was like, okay. And then I bought it because it sounded kind of fun. And I started reading it, and it's about two popular actors. They fall in love. They're filming a rom-com. One of them's a closeted lesbian. Because they're like A-listers, right? The other one hasn't been with a woman before, but there's this, like, chemistry. And then I was about a quarter of the way through, and I was like, wait. I think I read this before. And I did. And I was like, wait. Did I recommend this already? And I did. In episode 20, I recommended the book About That Kiss by Harper Bliss. She must have released it must have been some kind of different release. Like maybe there was an audiobook put out or something like that. I don't know. I just wasn't paying close enough attention. And this is where it's great to not have the best memory, because sometimes you read a book and you think, I don't think I've read this before. And then you realize you have, and you're like, hey, I get to enjoy it again.
Right. Almost, it's like a brand new book.
First time. I know. And it's super fun. And I think it's funny. You would think I would have remembered it because I did enjoy it so much. And reading it again, I actually think it might be my favorite of her books.
Oh.
Because it's just like this, it's fun, it's frothy, the chemistry is really wonderful. There's basically no angst. It's like a perfect comfort read. I don't know that it's her best book, but it is probably my favorite. And so I stuck it in my favorites folder on my Kindle so that I remember that it exists in the future when I am looking for a fun and frothy comfort read. And then I think this book is going to be released a week or so after the episode. So, you know, if you're inclined, pre-order on Amazon or go get it. It should be available on the Bold Storks Books website. But I also read Cabin Fever by Tegan Shepherd. It's been a while since I've tried to read anything from her. And the premise was like, okay, this is kind of interesting. So there's these two rival medical equipment salespeople. They're at a trade show. Morgan immediately hates Shelby. Morgan is the kind of more androgynous, not quite mask, but just kind of more in that, yeah, androgynous place. And Shelby is quite femme. And Morgan hates Shelby immediately because she thinks she's this total typical, like kind of sleazy, chameleon-esque salesperson who's just completely fake. And Shelby just thinks Morgan's like really cute and what's with her? And oh, wait, why does she hate me? What's going on? She just, what? And when it's all over, they're at the same airport to go home. There's a snowstorm happening and it's cute. The person that introduces them is Morgan's mentor at work, Chad. He's this guy who's probably in his...
Chad.
Well, he's probably in his 60s. He's like the best Chad ever, actually. Oh, okay. I love that it's almost like a, no, there are good Chads and this is one of them. And you should know. He introduces them because he's the kind of sales guy that's like relationship driven, knows everybody, knows his customers, knows the competitors, salespeople, friends with everyone. I love those kinds of sales reps. So he introduces them and he had told Morgan, like, when in doubt, rent a car just in case. And so Morgan is at the airport. It's snowing so much. And she's like, I'm going to rent a car. Oh shit. It's the last rental car available. I'm definitely going to book it just in case. Because if she can get on her flight, she can release the car. Except she can't because all the flights are canceled. So she grabs the car. She's kind of on her way out. She sees Shelby on her phone. And this, like, she can just, it's almost like she's just getting smaller as she's on the phone. Because she's on the phone with her boss. And her boss is clearly a total dick. And so she has this moment of like, huh, I don't like this woman. I don't like the way she sells. But maybe she is a human after all. And they don't live that far from each other. So she offers her a ride too. It's going to be a 7-hour drive. But wow. One car crash on a remote side road and a hike towards a light in the distance later, they are alone in a cabin. That in good news, it is well stocked. There's canned foods. There's some dude's clothes are in there. There's puzzles. There's books. Except Morgan still hates Shelby. And she's so awful to her that Shelby starts to kind of hate her too. Like, why are you so fucking mean to me? And so it's like, now they're just saying things to each other, but also they're both hot and they're both single and they're actually both pretty good people. So what could possibly happen in a romance novel? I thought this was a cute book. There wasn't a ton of, I don't know that I would call it. Yeah. I don't think there was a ton of angst. There was quite a bit of tension, but it was loaded in the like first half of the book, really, because of how much Morgan couldn't stand Shelby, how antagonistic she was, how much she pushed her into not liking her either. It's been a while since I've read anything that felt like a true enemies to lovers book, because I often see books labeled as that, where it's like one person views the other as an enemy, but the other doesn't view them the same way.
Right.
And so in this case, it sort of started like that. And then Morgan pushed Shelby into like, you know what? Fuck you too.
Like, if you're not going to like me, I'm not going to like you.
Yeah, exactly. You're mean to me and this doesn't make any sense and leave me alone. And what are you? Let's take our clothes. No, they don't take their clothes off as quickly as I would have liked. The thing that was tough for me with this book was because of the whole premise of them being rivals in work. Like they work for competitive companies selling competitive products. And my day job brain just could not be shut off around that because like I haven't been a sales rep, but I've been working really closely with sales reps for almost a decade. And like a big part of my job for the last 5 years has been doing deep research on competitors and coaching on selling against competitors. So there was times where I was like, what are you doing? You shouldn't say that to a competitor's sales rep. Why? So that's very much a me problem. I don't think that's a problem that most other people would have.
Right, we'll pick up on.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that's Tegan's job.
Oh, really?
I think so.
She should not say those things to a competitor.
maybe if you're trying to get in with the... You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know either. But yeah, it's funny. It's rare that I come across things that feel close to what I do at work, but this one did it. And then I'm reading another one that I'll probably talk about next time where the lead character literally has the same title that I do for my job. Oh. And I was like,
here we go.
What?
Red pen.
What?
Red pen.
Are we writing about product marketers now? Is that what's happening in romance? Don't do that. Please don't do that. Yeah, I had a fun time with this one, but I'm also really glad that it had an epilogue because I think it needed it. If it didn't have an epilogue, I would have called the ending a happy for now, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with a happy for now, but it's that epilogue that really proved that they have happily ever after. And so if you like enemies to lovers romances, if you're looking for something that's not super angsty but does have some kind of fun antagonism in there, this is a good choice for that.
Good.
So Chris, promised us a double feature. Are you ready to tell us all about it for your official recommendation?
I will and I am. So I have two movies this time. One is for listeners who were adults around 1988 and knew the struggles firsthand of being queer and finding your place in this world. And the other is a movie made this year, 2024, that's out in theaters now. That's a thriller and it's gruesome with some of today's hottest stars. Like, we have come a long way, baby, for queer films. And I started off the weekend watching the first movie, and it was a movie that was made in 2022. And it's called Blue Jean. And here's a synopsis. In Northern England in 1988, a new law stigmatizing gays and lesbians forces Jean, a closeted gym teacher, to live a doubled life. As pressure mounts from all sides, the arrival of a new student catalyzes a crisis that will push Jean to the edge. Okay. So she's in the closet. And she's able to be a chameleon because she was married to a man and divorced him. So the other teachers who try to fix her up are like, oh, she's ready. It's totally understandable. So when in reality, she has a girlfriend named Viv, who's totally out and proud, and she hates that Jean is still in the closet. And I really don't know what kind of job Viv has, but she like has a shaved head. She has tattoos everywhere. She wears leather. She's very mask/butch presenting, and she doesn't care what other people think about her, you know? And Jean is the exact opposite. She's afraid of losing everything. She could lose her job. You know, she already doesn't talk to her mom. And while her sister pretends to support her, she still has a photo of Jean and her ex-husband up on the mantle because it's such a beautiful picture of Jean.
Ew,
you know, so that right there tells you, you're just like, you're just saying that to make your sister happy, to keep the peace, but you really don't support her in her life. Or else, you know, she would have burned that picture in a bonfire where they drank a bunch of cheap wine out, you know.
Cut him out of the photo.
Yeah, or cut him out of the photo or put like a happy face on him. But no, like it's still up on, it's still like presenting right up there on the mantle. And she goes over there and she's like, I've asked you to take this picture down. And she's like, oh, but you're so pretty. Like, that's my favorite.
So disrespectful.
It totally is. So, you know, in all fairness, like back in the 80s, it was hard, like, to get anyone to really accept you. You know, queerness was everywhere in music, you know, and I love how like the music had gender fluidity, and the musicians back then, it was kind of accepted with them and with creative people, you know, but society as a whole wasn't as accepting. You know, AIDS was a raging epidemic and homosexual men, and there wasn't a cure. You know, now there are ways to slow it down. There are medications where you can live a full, you know, healthy, happy life. But back in the 80s, it gave people an excuse to haze even more. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just like, it was validated. Look, even nature doesn't want you to be here and they're killing you off. And so Jean, like, of all things, is a PE teacher in high school. Like,
Of course you that,
were gay. Right.
The stereotypical.
Right. But also, I mean, like it's the worst position for a queer to be in, especially during that time, you know, during the 80s. And, you know, the girls are in the shower. You see them naked in the shower and, like, you know, naked in the dressing room. And it's just like, if I could never be a PE teacher, because I would never want to be in a situation where somebody accused me of something. Like, like that is red flags, even now in today's society. Like, I coached girls basketball and I was never in a situation with them. Like, yeah. I would never put myself in that situation just because I know how callous people can be. And there are jerks still out there in the world. Jean is a very likable person, but she really does struggle with her identity. And it's very obvious. You know, she wants to live her authentic self, but everything is against her. You know, and you always hear when she's driving or if she's at her home or, you know, she has a TV on and it's the news, or she's listening to news radio in her car. And it's, they talk about, like, and in England, there were so many laws passed where gays couldn't say anything about who they were. They had to, it wasn't don't ask, don't tell type thing. It was like, don't put your agenda on our children. You know, teachers were really harshly treated, very much so. And you just felt like the pain and anguish because she really is a good teacher and very involved in these kids' lives. She really wants to help them, but she's held back because she's scared. And so there's an incident that happens where it really puts her to the test. You know, she's not accused of anything, but there's this new queer student and she is witness to something. She witnesses something and she doesn't speak up. So it's kind of like she feels really bad about that. And so it's her wrestling with herself. Like, she really, in order to correct things, she really needs to come out and just tell people who she is. And it was a very good ending. Like, I really enjoyed the ending. I was kind of sad during the whole movie. I'm like, don't tell me this is going to be one of those sad gay movies. And it really actually ended up a lot better than I expected to. So,
good.
Yeah. So you just know, like, seeing it, you know, that it's very liberating for Jean at the end. And you just know that things are going to be okay. Good. So, yeah. So the other movie, I'm going to blame on you because when we chatted yesterday, I was in the middle of Blue Jean and I was like, this is not going to go well. And so I told you and you said, hey, how about the movie Love Lies Bleeding? Because it just came out.
And you don't mind violent stuff. And I've been seeing a lot of hype about it. And I'm a big old baby.
Right.
I have specifically been told, actually, not even by Neil, but by Neil's best friend. He was like, it was great. Tara should not watch it, though. It's too
you
violent.
You should not watch this. Like, well, I was surprised.
Somebody needs to just do like a super cut of just Katie O'Brien lifting weights. Like, and then just send that to me.
You're not even going to get that. Well, no, I'm just kidding. So Love Lies Bleeding is a mainstream movie and it's still at theaters. Like, it is still at theaters. It stars everyone's favorite queer people, Kristen Stewart, I'm still not a fan, and Katie O'Brien, which I'm totally a fan. So yes, we'll get back to that. But it also stars like other heavy hitters in Hollywood, including Jenna Malone. You know who she is, right? Yeah. Ed Harris, Dave Franco, and Anna Baryshnikov.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the cast for sure. I'm like, you know, it was one of those where, because I went into it not knowing anything. You're like, hey, I heard about this movie. What about it? Okay. And so I just rented it. I rented it off of like my Xfinity. You can rent it on Prime Video. Any streaming service you have, you can rent it off of it. Mm-hmm. So here's the synopsis. Lou, who is Kristen Stewart, is a reclusive gym manager who falls hard for Jackie, who is Katie O'Brien, an ambitious bodybuilder who's headed to Vegas to pursue her dream. Their love soon leads to violence as they get pulled deep into the web of Lou's criminal family. Okay, so you're picturing something in your mind based on that. But this movie takes place in nowhere Southwest USA, and I think it's Texas. And the year is 1989. So I went from 1988 England to 1989, possibly Texas, New Mexico, somewhere in there. Yeah. So I was alive in the 80s, but I feel like they filmed it as though it was more like 1983.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe 84, but like Kristen Stewart is very Joan Jett. She like looks like Joan Jett. She's got the shag. She has the ripped t-shirt and she just loathes life. She's just like she's stuck in this tiny town that's like the length of a blink. It's very, very small, has the tumbleweeds. And she works for this gym that basically is like a garage and it just has a bunch of equipment in it. And so she's like, she closes it, she opens it. She's, I mean, it's not like Planet Fitness down the street. Like it's pretty rough. She basically spends her time looking at the people. She doesn't work out. She's just like doodling on paper or whatever she's smoking. It's like she is like not involved in working out at all. So like she's out and proud. She's gay. She's everybody knows it. Her sister lives in the town. She has, I think she has a nephew and her brother-in-law. He does not like her. Like, and it could be because she's gay. We don't really know. And her dad is part of the mob.
Oh boy.
But she doesn't really talk to him. And she doesn't know what happened to her mom. So she's like messed up already. Like she has like, there's so many unanswered questions and she's stagnant. She's in the city. There's the city. Fuck. She's like a little town. She's stuck there. She has nowhere to go. No incentive to go anywhere. It's just, she is just waking up every day doing, you know, going to her job and going to bed. So Jackie blows into town on her way to Vegas and like, she like works out and you see her like super muscly body. And it's like really turning Lou on. And they have this like almost immediate obsessive relationship. I mean, and there it's, they have a lot of sex. There's a lot of sex in this movie, like a lot
of
sex.
Good for them.
It's on the screen. It doesn't fade to black. It doesn't like under the cover sex. It is out and proud, loud, gay. I mean, it is beautiful.
We've kind of needed something like that in cinema for a long time, haven't we?
Right.
Like it's been since Bound,
I mean,
maybe?
Yeah.
I suppose Drive Away Dolls is kind of known for that too, but it also sounds like not everybody's loving that movie. So
yeah, it wasn't for me. I mean, I don't think I finished it. It started off really good and then it just tanked for me. Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot of violence in this too. A lot of sex, a lot of violence, which shocked me. You know, I wasn't ready for it. You know, it's a very dark movie and it has dark humor. The good news is no queer dies in this movie and they do. All right. So it has a quote unquote happy ending. I don't know how to say that without getting, you know, it's a really wild ride. And at one point I was like, oh, come on. But then I just decided to enjoy the far-fetchedness of this movie because it was really great to see mainstream queer with a decent and positive ending, given everything that queers have had to do to get there. Like we went from like all the queers dying in movies to like, here's something that's kind of like a Thelma and Louise type thing, but not with a Thelma and Louise ending. So
I kind of love that because we've had to suspend disbelief for so many action movies over the years with like straight dudes or straight couples.
Right, right.
So why not have something equally preposterous? Preposterous. This is the episode where we're like, you know what?
Fuck we struggle words. Over words. Yeah, words suck on a Sunday.
I know.
Sunday morning.
Boo.
Yeah. And so like this movie is very different than Blue Jean because like at one point, Kristen Stewart is asked if her dad hates her being gay, and she's like, "Oh, he doesn't care at all. Like, it's not even it's not even a point in this whole thing." Mm-hmm. So queerness is in the movie, but it's not the movie. Unlike Blue Jean, where it's all about being queer. So you know, the acting is good in both movies. Like I said, Blue Jean is more about internal struggle based on outwardly hate, and Love Lies Bleeding is about like an external struggle dealing with other things other than queerness. So. Mm-hmm. like I said before, we've come a long way, baby. And it's just good for people to watch both movies and just to see like how far we've had to come. Like you see the people now who are like in their 20s, you know, Gen Zs are like, oh, Kristen Stewart's the greatest thing. She's like the mother of queer blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, yes, watch this movie, but also be aware of the history too. And mm-hmm. and watch how it was for people who, you know, did struggle.
Yeah, it's also interesting. I don't know if it feels this way from that film, but I saw a meme recently that was showing like all the things that were said about like gays and lesbians and bisexuals kind of in the 1970s, you know, shouldn't be around children and like all these things yeah. are the things that are being said about trans people now. And so right. it's interesting to see yes. that. What's the next frontier on trying to fight the LGBTQ community? Well, it is trans people.
Mm-hmm.
They are coming for us by using the same bullshit tropes and things they used to say then.
Right. And they're turning people in our community on one another.
Yes.
You know, that's, yes. that blows my mind.
Yeah. Terps. It's very ugly. So
yeah,
fuck those people, but also right. sounds like a couple of great movies.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Kristen Stewart does a good job of acting in this. She's not like,
you don't even like her.
I didn't like her. We all know this.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll take the queerness where I can. And, like, it's just, I'm going to have to watch it again before I lose, like, the rental. I'm going to have to watch it again because because I didn't know what it was about, really. I just mm-hmm. jumped into it. I love jumping into movies. If you know, yes, yeah. sci-fi, anything like that, apocalypse, I'll just jump right into it. Just, and I learn it as I go. But mm-hmm. I want to go back and make sure, like, then enjoy the movie for the movie itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because here I am, I'm always looking for a message. What's the message? Especially when I'm doing a recommendation, because yeah. I want to give people a heads up, you know, what's this movie about? What's it really about? And I feel mm-hmm. like I was really focused on that when I got to all the far-fetched, like suspension of disbelief, I was like, oh, come on. And now I feel like there's a lot of like symbolism and meanings behind things. And now I need to go back and like just watch it through knowing what it's like. It's kind of like reading the ending of mm-hmm. a book. Like I saw the ending. So now I just have to go back. And now that I know like what the ending is and what the end result is, then I should be able to follow it a little bit better when it goes like off the rails, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
So anyway,
I mean, I think again, the fact that you even want to watch it again so soon also speaks to there's something there.
Yeah. Yeah, there is something there. And it was funny because I looked online to see like kind of what people were saying about it. And it got a lot of good reviews. And I'm like, okay, all right, let me see why they thought that this was such a great movie. What made this movie great in their minds, besides it being a mainstream with a lot of heavy hitter Hollywood people?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of things, they downplayed a lot of the violence in it.
Oh.
And so I'm like, why did they downplay that? And it was almost comical in some spots. It was almost yeah. comical. And so I need to find out, like, you know, I think just because I'm overly sensitive to any like violence with queer people. And there mm-hmm. there is a scene where one of the characters gets punched by a guy. Mm-hmm. So there is that. There is violence against one of the leads, but there's also violence throughout the whole movie. So, I mean, it's one of those where you just go in knowing that it's pretty violent. And
yeah.
like the shows I like are violent, but it's like against zombies. I mean, yeah, there are some people yes. who get hurt and those kind of things, but this is like, this hurt a little bit more because, you know, it is queer people and, you know, mm-hmm. you want to protect our community as much as possible, but she fights back and that's all I'm going to say there.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you? What are your official your official recommendation, Tara?
So my official recommendation is a book called The Summer Love Strategy by Ray Stove, and it is actually a YA romance. I don't typically pick up YA, but there was something about this one that I thought sounded really cute, and I'm glad I did because I actually enjoyed it very, very much. So the whole book is told from the perspective of Haley. Haley has not had a girlfriend yet, but she's very, very crush prone. You know, like mm-hmm. those kids that kind of go mm-hmm. from like one crush to the next.
To another. Yeah.
So when we first meet her, she is devastated because her latest crush, Sharika, has a boyfriend. And it's just this like, how am I going to live without her? And it's like, well, we never had her in the first place.
Right.
But her best friend, Talia, also hasn't had a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and she's ready to maybe start dating. And so these two besties, they make a plan. They each want to find love. They're just finishing, you know, the summer is just beginning. And so they like write out an actual plan of, these are all the activities we're going to do this summer. And in that way, we are going to maybe, you know, like find our first people. And so they are going to go to the beach. They're in Seattle. So there's this beach that has a pool. So they're going to go to the pool at the beach. They're going to go to Pride. There's lots of queer people at Pride. They're going to go to a concert. And there are always birthday parties in the summer. So maybe there will be a birthday party and they can find someone at all of these. And lots of things happen along the way, including Haley gives herself a terrible haircut that has to be fixed. But like, as they go along, they each find a person that seems really promising at first. But then what if actually the person, what if their person is each other? Is kind of the, it's very,
it's the
very,
moment.
I know. And it's funny. I want to call it friends to lovers because it is, but also it's like, no, they're teenagers. Barf, don't call them lovers, which is right. My middle-aged person bias. So this book was very, very cute. And it's also very, very, very queer. Haley is a cisgender lesbian. Talia is trans and bisexual. Between their friends and their family, I don't think there are very many straight characters at all. There are some non-binary characters. There, you know, one of them has like, not these two, but like one of the side characters has two moms. And so it's just clearly this, like, our narrator is this girl who's managed to find this like really loving, accepting, super queer bubble that she's able to live in Seattle. And good for her. Like, I love this for her because it's so joyful. There's also a lot of neurodiversity. Not necessarily all of the kids have diagnoses for everything, but like Haley is fairly clearly has ADHD. There are other kids with ADHD in the group. There's autism in the friends group. And I think it's interesting reading a YA book as a middle-aged person because I recognize I am not the audience for this book. This is not for me. So there's times I'm reading it where it's like, well, this seems kind of overblown. And it's like, yeah, of course, because somebody who is 15 turning 16 is telling this story. And when I could sit back, it was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that is what it's like to experience the world as an undiagnosed, unmedicated ADHD teenager, where like already as a teenager, every emotion is kind of the most. But when you have ADHD in the mix as well, there's like no moment to pause and say, what am I feeling right now? It's like, no, all of that. And really brought that for Haley. And I'll also say too, like they're older than my kids. Cause I think I said before my kids are 9 and 12, but they're not that much older than my 12-year-old. And there were just some things that really rang true in the characterization where it actually even made me wonder, like, oh, are some of these dynamics kind of like what she goes through with her friend groups? Like some of the drama that happens or some of the things. And I thought that was really good and interesting. And the friendship between Haley and Talia is also just very, very sweet. And because they've been best friends for so long, they have like all of these rituals and these things that are theirs that I thought... Like, again, it's just so cute. Like when you're 15, when you're 16, that friend who's been your friend forever, like it just feels like everything. And it's so important. But, you know, like, I don't want to shock you, but the character, of course, that I identified with the most, although I could definitely identify with Haley, is like, yes, if I had been able to recognize that I was queer as a teenager, I probably would have seen more of myself in her. There were still some. But really, it was Haley's mom. I loved her. And that was the one that like, oh, yeah, nope, that feels real. Like watching how her mom is just trying to support her as her kid is running around in the world. Her heart is on her sleeve. She wants a girlfriend so bad. She has no buffer. She has no barriers.
Right.
And how
no
do
healing.
You
su- yeah. A, yeah.
Yeah. Like, how do you support a kid like that? And I mean, she's incredibly accepting of Haley being a lesbian. Like, that's fine. But it is just that, like, you could tell the mom just wants to wrap her up in bubble wrap so bad and can't. And it's these like little tiny nuances of, I need to let you be your own person. I need to let you figure out your own thing, but I am absolutely here to catch you when you feel safe enough to fall. And I love that. And I really appreciated that. So yeah, I feel like I should have more to say about this book. And I don't know if it's because it's a YA that I don't, but I think it's wonderful. I think it's written with a real like intensity and immediacy that feels real for a teenager with ADHD. I think the friendships are great. There was also something to seeing like, oh yeah, those are the text conversations, I suppose, that maybe teenagers would have. Cause that's something like, I didn't grow up with texting as a teenager. It wasn't there. And I don't look at my kid's phone. So I don't know what she's texting with other people, but you know, there was also an element there where I have to admit, I was relieved that there was no, like, you know, there's terrible news stories about teens and social media. Ugh. And I'm glad that this story didn't have any of that. So like, as much as they were dealing with real things and, you know, there's a couple that nearly breaks up in the friend group. And so there's like, there are these things that like feel tough in the moment. It also felt like this wonderful, safe, I did call it a bubble before, and I don't mean that at all as a dig. I actually think that it's a wonderful thing. They have this like little bubble of comfort of like this wonderful, queer, neurodiverse, loving, supporting group. And I think, you know, any kid could read this. It's lovely. It's fun. There's no sex in it at all. There's a little bit of kissing. Like, I would let my 9-year-old read this if she was inclined to read it. So I think if you have a queer or a straight kid in your life and you're looking for a book to pick up for them, especially like say as they're going off into the summer and you want to get them a book to read for the summer because it's a book that takes place over a summer, would be really fun, and get that and give it to them. Cause yeah, it was cute.
That sounds, yeah, it sounds really cute.
Mm-hmm. So I will probably continue to mostly stick with reading adult romances. but it is nice to every so often take a dip into the YA waters, see what's there.
Yeah.
Because I do also want to be able to like either hand books to my kids or their friends, or every so often somebody's like, hey, can you recommend? And this time, yes, I absolutely can. I do recommend The Summer Love Strategy by Ray Stove. So that's all for this episode. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. Have you subscribed yet? I hope you have. If you haven't, hit that button so you get notified when we release an episode. If you haven't given a rating or a review, we would really especially love that so, so much. We would appreciate that. And again, if you have a friend that you think would like the show, please tell them all about it.
Or if you want to connect with us on your favorite social media sites, we have links in the show notes for that as well. Or as you know, you can always email us at podcast@queerlyrecommended.com. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, everybody.